Welcome back to the 2% Solution, where we dive into stories of transformation and triumph. Today's episode holds a special place in my heart as we welcome Brian Falchuk, an incredible figure of resilience and change. Interestingly, my journey into the world of podcast began with my very first guest appearance on Brian's show years ago, making this conversation a full circle moment. Brian, with his do-a-day philosophy, has inspired countless individuals, including myself, to live better one day at a time. Today, we're here to share actionable insights, some uplifting stories, and the lessons we've learned along the way. Strap in for a deeply personal and motivating episode that explores the power of daily actions in achieving lasting change. Brian, welcome to the 2% Solution Podcast.
It's awesome to be here, Dai.
Oh, man. As I said in the introduction, everyone, this is a treat for me because this is completely full circle. We're talking about a decade in the making here, quite literally. And yeah, I think just literally, it's got to be about 10 years now, maybe if not, maybe a little bit more. But
I think actually. Yeah.
Is it just over? I think it is. Because I think it was like around 2012 or 2013. But where I was going with this is the very first podcast that I ever went on was Brian's. And now to have you back on a guest on my new podcast, finally getting into my own, it just feels like, just makes me feel all warm inside, you know? I get all the feels. And you just shared something with me about that.
Yeah. So you were my first guest ever on like my original podcast, Enlighten Your Body is what it was called. I actually forgot the title. I was like, the heck's that? Oh, yeah, that used to be my show. But dude, yeah, 2012, I remember I was sitting on the bed in our guest bedroom, really nervous to send an email to this guy I had been like bromancing, stalking on Facebook. And that was kind of the main platform back then, to hope that like you might actually respond. And you did within minutes. And I literally jumped off the bed and ran off to my wife. I'm like, you know, that guy I've been talking about, he just wrote back to me. And, yeah, little did you know, and little did I know.
And look where we are now.
Yeah.
We're just 10 years older and a few more gray hairs.
Well, that's why I've got a hat on just to protect that. Yeah. So a few more gray hairs, a guy with a like thick blonde hair. Yeah. Whatever. You don't understand.
Well, listen, if I just got to keep this somewhat shaved because when my chin hairs come out and you know, there's only a few of those. Cause I was saying to everybody, I don't grow it on my face, but I seem to do okay on my head. Yeah. But when it does come out on my face, it's a lot of grays there, man.
All right.
So don't worry, it's coming. It's coming. I know I'm going to wake up one day and it'll be like Ted Danson, right? Just white.
Oh, wow. You know? All right. Yeah, could be.
It happened with my grandpa. It was like literally over a 12-month period. And he was like in his 50s. He went this. He still had a full head of hair, but he went to that white mane like almost instantly in the span of 10 months. And I, my mom often blames herself for that, but we'll see. anyways, hey, listen, I want to dive in because you are one of the OGs, and I've told this on other episodes, you know, OG, I know a lot of people just think hip hop, original gangster, and I'm like, no. We're old guys, right? So we're the original OGs, and the big thing was, Brian, is when it came to this idea of small incremental changes.
Yeah.
You were one of the first guys that I thought was extremely prolific with that messaging. And I know it didn't come by accident, wasn't even by design, but it was by experience. And would you mind sort of just, let's start there. Talk a bit about your story and where that philosophy of do a day came from.
Yeah, well, you're part of that story, whether you want me to get into that or not, it's going to happen. But, you know, for me, I, and there's a similarity in our backstories, slight difference in the details, but, you know, I grew up obese, as do tons of people around the world. You know, mine was a byproduct of a lot of anxiety that I grew up with around my parents getting divorced when I was young. And I always joke, like I was the youngest, I was the marriage saver baby, and I failed in my first job. You know, all kidding aside, as a little kid, like you just need things to be okay. And, you know, with divorce and there's fighting and, you know, moving out and all that kind of fun stuff that comes with divorce, it's not okay. And as like a five-year-old, you cannot do a thing about that. And for me, obviously, I wasn't like going to sit down with my parents and be like, listen, you know, I'm having a lot of distress and discomfort about this. I'd like to discuss it with you and work through my emotions. Like, that ain't going to happen. but I still needed that comforting and I just didn't understand it. So I turned to things I could access and could control, and that was food. And, you know, food really works well at quieting that anxiety for about 7 minutes, you know, maybe eight if you're lucky, probably more like three. And that's the problem there. And so like eating does not actually cure anxiety. It's not even a Band-Aid. And so the more you eat, the more you eat. And it got out of hand. And, you know, it got to a place where I would say, if you look at a picture of me, age five, age six, I'm roughly twice the weight at age six. And I was roughly speaking like 100 pounds overweight through my entire childhood into adult, you know, early adulthood or late teens. Lost weight, which was amazing in high school, thanks to this incredible guy who just changed my relationship to exercise. But I still didn't deal with the anxiety. And that's because it was serving me. Because now that I was older and more capable and had a car and then had a job and had, I could actually solve for the things that when I say like the sky is falling, I could jump in and save the day. And so I actually started justifying the anxiety because it's like, well, if I didn't do that, if I didn't freak out and jump in, then look what would happen. You know, everything would collapse. My job rewarded me for that. I was a management consultant. I was paid to find where the sky's falling, jump in and lift it back up. And it's like, obviously, I didn't get any of that at the time. But in hindsight, it's like everything I was doing in my life was just reinforcing the things that were working against my life. And it finally came to a head. And you know, we can talk about this, but I almost lost my wife. I got a call from her doctor that she wasn't going to make it. And it was in that moment and thinking about my two-year-old who was watching his mother die in front of his eyes. If he's just left with me as his only parent, this poor kid has no hope for happiness in life because I am this like, get out of my way. I got to get this done. And just like constantly freaking out kind of person. And it was, I needed an external event and an external place to stick all of my hope into because I had enough issues with myself that like I wasn't in a place where I could be like, no, I deserve to not feel this way. And it had to be about him for me in that moment. But that's what then sparked me to say like, hang on a second. If I don't deal with this, yeah, he's going to pay. Ultimately, I got to a place where it's like, and I'm already paying. And like, isn't that worth it? But I'd sum this up with like, why do a day? When you're really overweight, it's always too much weight to start the exercise, yeah, to start the diet. Because it's like, you kill yourself at the gym today. You eat nothing. Like you do everything that all the Instagrammers are telling you, like do this one thing. And it's like, you know, you're exhausted. You get on the scale and it's like 99 pounds to go. It's like, oh my God, that's like the same as 100. It's always too much. The mountain is always too much. And I realized that every day. And so what I realized in this whole do a day moment was I'm not losing all of the weight today. I'm not stepping to the top of the mountain today. I just need to take a step today. And I don't need to worry about what are the steps that are ahead of me or frankly, like, did I misstep yesterday? Because a lot of us do that. It's like, oh no, you know, I screwed up. I had this one thing that's not on my diet. Now it's all ruined. So I'm going to go eat a cheesecake and four pizzas. And, you know, like we throw it all away because something from yesterday. But it's like yesterday's not happening and tomorrow's not going to happen. We don't know what's going to be with it. So can we just do the best we can for ourselves from a place of what really matters for us in this moment? And it was when I realized that I stopped feeling this impossibility, this weight, this sky is falling crushingness. And that allowed me to actually dig into like going to see a therapist, you know, because it's like, how am I going to make all these appointments work with my wife and my kid and my job? And it's like, you're not making 80 appointments work for the next 6 years. You just have to go tomorrow or whatever it is, you know? That's what do a day was. It was freeing me up to focus on what can I do in this moment that's better for me and those I care about and the purpose that I live for. That's it. I don't need to think about anything else because none of that's happening and I don't know what will happen with it. So I need to release the anxiety and pressure of it.
Oh man, I just, whenever I hear your story, because I'm familiar with it, I'm familiar with the book, I got a copy of it, you know, and I got to say, you know, it brings back a lot of my own memories. And I imagine that it's also, if not triggering, it's definitely a trip down memory lane for a lot of folks, especially yeah, today and just the world economy that we see. You know, it's the health challenges. As much as we have greater knowledge and wisdom than we've ever had in a time before, the obesity epidemic is in full swing, you know, and it's not ever trending down. It's only trending up. And so I feel these stories are so important to tell, not only because they're inspiring and motivating, but really it's also educational, you know.
Yeah.
I know that that's a big part of how you served your communities and still continue to serve is all around this idea of transformation and empowerment and also making actions, but making sure you're taking the right actions, right?
Yeah.
To create those results. And I guess, you know, what was most effective for you when you started this, because I appreciate it's like, I just got to get through today.
Yeah.
Do one thing today that moves me forward for tomorrow. And what was that for you though? Like was those activities that you started to do that really created the effect that you were looking for?
Yeah. Well, so here's the problem, Di, is when I, when I lost weight the first time, it was purely about activity and I actually became bulimic. I wasn't putting my finger down my throat. I was doing it through exercise, which I didn't see it because bulimia to me was someone who's, you know, who's forcing themselves to throw up. And this guy who's a mentor to me pointed out, he's like, you know, I'm afraid you're becoming bulimic. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not throwing up or anything. Like I eat, you know, and he's like, no, you're purging through exercise. Mm-hmm. Like I'm doing 4 hours on the elliptical or the, I had a Stairmaster that I bought and put in my bedroom. Right. And like literally like 5:30, I get on the thing and I just watch TV and I'm just like pumping for 4 hours straight. And if I didn't do it, I was miserable to be around. So it's not about exercising. Like, yes, that is a modality that has helped. And this is why it didn't work, was like, you can't just do that forever. And I didn't know why I was doing it and I didn't fix the issues. So for me, the thing that was different in 2011, it's August 1st, 2011, because that call I got from my wife's doctor was July 31st. I'll never forget it. The thing that was different was I actually reflected on what the heck actually mattered to me. Like, why do I need to do this? And that's why I say in that moment, it was about my son. And that very, you know, for any parents out there, it's like that very deep connection you feel and the importance of your child, especially when they're little, like he's 2, you know, he's not now.
And actually, before we dive into what the actions were, can you actually speak to that call? Cause I know this. And I think this gives great context to everybody out there. Because I mean, how many of us wait for that OS moment, right? That oh poop moment in our lives to finally start to make. And take actions, right? So if you don't mind, share that for a few minutes.
Well, and it was, you know, I say it's like a gun in your face kind of moment because that's what it was. I was, it was about 8 o'clock at night. You know, I was about to do the bedtime routine with my son. And my wife was a stay-at-home mom. And at this point, this is end of July, starting in late May, she had started to get sick and was at that point bedridden. She had wasted away to about 100 pounds. She was losing 2 pounds a day, literally, which like, you know, she's about 5'5" at the time. Like that's an extremely low weight and you don't have that many more 2 pound a day days to go through. And we live in Boston, like amazing medical community here. She'd been to every specialist under the sun. Her primary care doctor called me and he called our house, you know, I picked up, and he just said, yeah. So, you know, all her tests still look fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with her, but she keeps getting worse. There's really nothing we can do at this point. Huh. I'm going on vacation. I'll check in 6 weeks.
Ah.
And like, he was taken off for the rest of the summer. And I just said to him, I was like, doctor, she's losing 2 pounds a day. Do the math. She won't be here in 6 weeks. And he just goes, okay, we'll take her to the ER if you need to. And he literally hung up the phone. There's a whole conversation about the medical community and caring and like blaming the patients. We're like, that's a whole other topic that matters. You need to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. But I get off that call and this was, you know, the sky is falling fear I'd been living with for a while now, trying to balance a full-time job, this little kid who is still very much hands-on and a mom who can't take care of him anymore. So how do I like, you know, and we didn't have help. So it's like, how do I make all this work? And in the back of my mind, I'm afraid she's not going to make it. But I never said that out loud. No one ever said that to me. And I felt like, okay, Brian, that's just you being too scared about it. Like, that's not realistic. She'll get through this. Then I get this call from her doctor who's like, yeah, well, then take her to the ER. She's not going to make it, which is totally irresponsible. But that made it very real. And so you get off a call like that and you're just totally stunned. I walk into our bedroom. I don't know when I'm supposed to, like, am I supposed to be like, yeah, the doctor thinks you're going to die while he's on vacation. Sorry. Like, I don't know what you say to that. But my son is at the foot of our bed looking up at his mother. And that's when it hits me. It's like, he is watching his mother die in front of his eyes. And I'm what he has left. Mm-hmm. And that's what totally floored me. And yeah, just to be totally clear, doctor was wrong. She is still alive. She still deals with health issues, but they're not in the process of taking her life. So things change dramatically. And there's her whole story. It's not my story, but her story around
that. I'd love to get her on. Just, I'm going to put this out there.
You should. She listens to the show too.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, you make sure you tell her.
Yeah.
I want to get her on because I want her episode to follow yours.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we'll mind just sharing what it was that she found out?
So she has chronic Lyme disease, which depending who's listening to this, you're either like, oh yeah, I know people have been through that. Or you're like, no, that's not real.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunately what the response is. And but she grew up in like Long Island and Vermont, which are two heavily populated with ticks kind of areas, and played outside a lot. And it was a normal thing. You had ticks on you. It happens. You go through the woods. Ticks don't tend to just come with Lyme disease. They bring a lot of other things to the party. And so it's messy. There's a lot to it. And when you don't treat it, it's really insidious and difficult. And the symptoms are not consistent, linear, or clear. They move around. There are good days and bad days. You get a lot of, well, you look good. You get a lot of fighting through. And then you have these periods where it's significantly worse. And the thing that I always say to people is like, have you ever had an unreliable car? If you've gotten in the car and you don't know if you're going to get from point A to point B and it starts making that noise and you're like, do I need to call for assistance? Like, am I going to make it? Imagine if that car was your body on a daily basis. And it's different because there's pain now and there's all sorts of other things, but to feel that level of instability, non-reliance and fear with just your body creates a situation of anxiety that is so insidious and so far-reaching that it's unbelievably hard to deal with. And so, you know, for that doctor to be like, you're getting yourself all worked up and, you know, you seem to be depressed. It's like, well, how would you feel if you were in this spot? But I can attest to you, that's not how she was before she got stricken. You know, it's not that she was this way and then that manifested. She was vibrant and, you know, highly involved mother, and something like she got sick and she'd had these bouts where it was like 1 or 2 days and then she'd recover. And so I kept waiting like every day. She had one of her flare ups and I was like, okay, it'll be over in a day or so. And we didn't know about the Lyme at the time. Mm-hmm. And it just kept not going away. And it kept getting worse and she kept wasting away. And so that's where it was like just spiraling out of control. And thank God it hasn't happened again. However, the things that were like the early warning signs of it, those have happened a lot. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, like, you know, you hear your car make that noise. There's been so many moments where it's like, is this just a passing thing or is this the start of another one of those? That's why it's such a difficult thing on a daily basis.
I appreciate you sharing this because, as you know, I know we've had conversations when we started our road trips. We had the pleasure of getting down to Boston and visiting you and the fam and sharing an awesome, was it a vegan dinner?
Was it a vegan place that has since closed down, which bums me out because I don't have that many options.
Yeah, I was going to say that was such a great restaurant.
And then they got very sick of us all. We stayed a long time and we were not quiet, but that's okay.
Our kids are pretty young at that time. So hey, yeah. Whenever. They were having fun. We dropped enough money. I think it's all good.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, I mean, I was also down there for a recert of my CrossFit. So it was just a wonderful opportunity to all connect and get that out of the way. But I do remember us sharing the conversation because I've been very open about my autoimmune condition.
Yes.
And how, yeah, symptoms aren't always the same. You know, they are changing. And that's the challenge with when your immune system's under attack. I mean, and to be fair, the doctor's still... They're so afraid of making wrong guesses.
Yeah.
They stop
or
making.
They don't know, you know. Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's super difficult, but it was that extreme situation, extremely emotional point that forced me then to be like, you know, what really counts here? What matters? And it was like a reevaluate your entire life and kind of your operating system, if you will, like your core values. And that put it all front and center. So the next morning, was my exercise different? Yes. Because I knew, I already knew how to be different. Like, I had lost weight before. I knew the things I should have been doing, but it just like, oh, I just don't want to. You know, I'll get on the elliptical, but I'll, it was magazines back then. The iPad wasn't invented yet. So it's like, yeah, right. You know, I'll just open a magazine and, you know, next thing I know, it's beeping because it's done. You know, it's like I was a turkey in the oven. I wasn't actually a person exercising. I'm like, no, I should be doing intervals. And when they hit, I should hit back. And but I was like, ah, I don't want to, and I'm tired. And so you need something more than just feeling bad about the way you look to actually put that effort in. And it, I used to joke, Dad, that I was like, I spent the first half of my life obese and the second half trying not to be. What a horrible way to live your life. Like, hi, I'm Brian. I try not to be fat. Like, oh, that's awesome. What a great guy. I'd love to spend time with him. I don't have, my exercise is zero to do with the way I look or fitting into things or any of that. I actually don't care about that at all. I exercise because I love it. I love the way it makes me feel. I love the challenge. I love the achievement. There are days when it's harder than others. There are days where I don't perform the way I wish I did. And I, instead of being mad at myself for it, I'm like, okay, well, let's think about that. What was my knee hurting? Was I tired? Was it this? Was it that? Where was my mind at? Was I distracted? So I'm looking at it and trying to understand myself better. And that's why it's not just action, because you can't just take action. I always warn people, like, just is a four-letter word. If you hear someone say the word just, watch out for what they're saying next, because it's a total underrepresentation of the true issue at hand. So I tapped into what actually matters to me. And when you really do that, you know, it's like I say, when people tell you to dig deep, it's like, this is what you're digging for. It's what's that thing that's going to rise you up above the challenge you're facing that will keep you on that path. And I just got in touch with that. And, you know, we can go into it more, but like, I got in touch with that at a profoundly deep level that, like, I mean, you know, I did a TEDx talk on all this.
Yes, absolutely. So
I've talked about this a gazillion times. I wrote a book on it, which you were the catalyst for the book, which is another Di Manuel influencing my life positively moment. But I'm on stage there and like, I'd rehearsed this thing. I'd done this talk a number of times and I well up and I'm like, oh, I might start crying on stage. Even though it's something I've talked about a million times, it's that powerful for me. Like, I know some people in the audience were upset, but like, this is ultimately about me. I didn't do any of this for, I hope it helps other people. But one thing I came to grips with really early and not jumping ahead of the book was, you go through these ups and downs, and we're going to buy it. Oh my God, maybe you're going to make Oprah's list. My mother's not even going to buy it. I'm not going to sell a single copy. Like, you go through these ups and downs, right?
Oh gosh, yeah.
But I realize when I'm writing it, like, I can't choose to write this or not based on whether it's going to sell a gazillion copies or not. I need to write this because doing this helps me tremendously. And if no one reads it, I'm actually totally okay with that because I have taken so much for my life and how I can impact the lives of others through just how I am, that it's worth it. Even if, you know, not a single book is sold. And you know, the economics of selling books is like,
oh yeah,
even if a lot of books are sold, like, I'm not quitting my day job off of one book. No. So
I hear you, man. I'm the same way. but the book does bring wonderful opportunities and great opportunity to connect with amazing people, you know?
Yeah.
And also just, I've always maintained, you know, if one person is positively impacted by something that I create, you know, content wise, I sleep really well at night, you know, just knowing that. And because I know for myself, there's been those moments where I've been really low and just that right message pops up at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible how profound it can shift us, you know? Yeah. And I appreciate all the content that you've put out over the years, because a lot of it is around motivation and mindset and really this idea of aligning that purpose, mission, vision, you know, to one direction, right? Getting everything aligned. And so I'd love for you to maybe just chat a bit about that piece, the motivation and the mindset. And then, you know, of course, because I know people are curious, they're like, well, what did you do? What were the actions you were doing? You know, so
why don't we start with mindset, motivation?
Because I love your thought.
Well, and it's funny, like I've written two kind of self-help, for lack of a better name, then I edited the fourth one. Yeah. They're all actually built in the same structure. So people are like, well, you write business books. That's how they know me. Like, what is the self-help? I'm like, it's all self-help. It's all the same. And it's because I introduce a concept and then I learn through examples. So the chapters or days is what I call them are actually like, this is a theme in my life. And I'm going to walk you through how those lessons we just talked about actually apply here so you can see it in practice. And what I'm trying to do is paint, this isn't just about weight loss. Like that is, that's just one manifestation of it. I talk about career stuff and parenting and all kinds of different issues. And then there's a million things I don't face that lots of other people do. The point being, like, A, it helps make the lessons practical, and B, it takes away a little bit of that excuse of, like, oh, this doesn't apply to me. And it's like, oh, that guy's just losing weight. I don't need to lose weight, so I don't need to worry about this. We all face all kinds of mountains and handcuffs and challenges. And that's why, like, I try to share lots of different perspectives on this general notion, because the reality is we should all be in touch with what matters to us. We should all find ways to achieve what we actually care about in life. And then we should pay it forward, right? Like, if we're better people, we're infecting those around us with that betterness. And that's a good thing. So the purpose I keep talking about is there are some fundamental aspects of that that I talk about. And it's like when we talk about weight loss for goals, you know, it's like beach season or high school reunion and you want to make them look, be jealous, or you're going to your ex's wedding. Somehow you got invited to the, I don't know what kind of, that's great. You guys are friends, but, you know, you want to make someone jealous or something like that. That's all fine. And that works for like 6 weeks. And then the event passes and you fall back into your old habits because you lost weight or you got a better job or you saved the money to go buy that car to, you know, whatever the one thing was that's temporal. That's not motivation. I think purpose can be a stronger word for this here. And what it is about getting in touch with that very deep down thing that has to be internal to you. So I said it was my son, and I was on a podcast as a guest and someone called me out. He's like, but you said it's going to be internal and you're basically like BSing us that your son's internal. He's not. So, you know, you're right. My feelings as his father. And he's like, well, dig into that. And I kept going back and it ultimately came back to me. And I just wasn't ready for that yet because I didn't feel enough, like, to sound mushy, but self-love. I wasn't ready to respect and value myself enough to realize, like, I actually don't want to be miserable. I don't want to always be in fight or flight. I want to just enjoy my life. And what does enjoy my life mean? I have to define that for me. But that's not a until beach season's over or, you know, I just have to get through this and then it's all going to be good. That's not life. Life will always throw you curveballs. It's just a question of whether you're swinging or not, right? Like that's up to you. So it's got to be, you know, deep inside of you. It can't be temporary. It has to be persistent. I always say it should never be material, which, like, how is something deep inside of you, like, I want a bigger house. But for some people, you know, they do focus on the material and that drives them for a while. But I'm like, you got to dig into, well, why did you care about that? So I give an example, right? When I was coaching someone who had just gotten laid off from a job, he was late 50s, already had great retirement savings, house was paid off, kids had moved out. And he actually had a pension from the job he just got let go from, and it was going to kick in. And his wife worked. And he's like, Brian, I got to find another job. You got to help me. And I'm like, okay, well, let's just take a breath on this. What is it you want to do? He's like, I don't know, but I need a job. I have to, you know, I got to pay the bills. I'm like, well, what bills are we talking about here? Because by the way, you got like 2 years of severance. So like the bills are ticking until you're like 60. And then like 5 years out, you get your pension. So it's a 5 year span. You get tons of savings. Like he had been a senior executive at a financial services company for a long time. But he was so in this rush and kept talking about paying the bills. I'm like, well, let's break that down. What are the bills? And he's like, well, the mortgage is this and the phone is this and the blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, do you have college tuition you're paying? He's like, no, the kids are on their own and they're good. Mortgage, you said that. He's like, well, actually, no, I mean, we paid the mortgage off. We own our house outright. I'm like, oh, so property tax. Okay, but that's smaller. Yeah. And if we started to break it down and we talked about his severance and we talked about what he's got saved and his wife's income. And he started to realize like, you know, the bills are totally taken care of. They're living well within their means, but he kept harping on it. And what we got to is like, it's his sense of being the breadwinner. And he was a sales executive. So he got his first job in sales when he was like 21, right out of undergrad. He had long blonde locks. He was an NCAA athlete. He's now white haired, diabetic, overweight. His sense of himself and the last time he actually thought about getting a job was when he was an unbelievable. at that point, but it wasn't him. It was how his kids saw him, how his wife saw him, how people from the outside saw him, his country club, all these kinds of things. He had no sense of himself. And it was taking him down to this very personal view on himself and thinking about, like, who are you? Last time you asked yourself that, if you asked yourself that, you were a child, really, in the grand scheme of things. You were a kid. That's the difference between the material, which is like, a pay the bills, have the things, versus like, well, who the heck are you? That's right. Like, you should not find a job when you don't even understand yourself, because unless by job, when you don't even understand. And that is what went for it. We were doing the work, but he got a job anyway, and 6 months he was out.
Wow.
Because it was like, and he hated it, but he's paying the bills.
Yeah. Like, you
know, wrong reason. So non-material is really important to me. And once you understand that, set that energy on a purpose. And for me, there were three things that I outlined that I'm like, these are immediate things I have to take back and control in my life. The first and most important was the anxiety bit. Enough excuses. Like, I need to find a way to make one appointment with a therapist work. And I was like, anything else is too much. So I'm going to do that. And I'm going to start the process. And once you make the one work, then you just have to make one appointment work. It's the second one, right? And that's, and the other was the weight. So I knew what I needed to do, but I was so fired up that morning. It's so much purpose and so much drive. I'm like, step aside, magazine. I'm going to, me and this elliptical are going to have a little conversation. And I beat the crap out of those intervals, if I'm being honest. I was so exhausted at the end of the session. I like, thank God I had a mat under my elliptical. That thing needed a mat under the mat, but it was great. And I was like hungry for more. And the last thing was, my job had been amazing and was not anymore. That was a longer burn, but I needed to start to do some things to position myself for the next role. And those were things I had known for some time, but just could never actually dig into. And the thing about success is, success begets success. So when you frame yourself to actually go after it, and you start, and you're measuring today, not, I need to know 20 years from now, did this work out? I was winning each day. Yeah. And when I wasn't, I was looking into why, and I still felt success because I came away understanding, like, now I know how I'm set up to do this better tomorrow. And so it was very much this building exercise. I love having conversations like this, because then, like, no doubt I'm going to do better tomorrow, because I'm like,
right. You get all amped up, but also it brings back those memories and those feelings of what you committed to. I mean, the identity conversation is so relevant, because I see, I've had periods in my life where I, you know, when I transitioned away from 17 years of building a company that I co-founded, you know, it was like, as much as I knew what I was sort of leaning into, I didn't really know who I was. I was sort of at a place to redefine who I want to be, but also, who do I want to become?
Yeah.
You know? And am I doing the actions that bring me closer to that? And I just keep thinking about Nietzsche when you have been talking, you know, it's just that idea of, I won't do it verbatim, but I mean, the summation of the quote is basically, you know, with a strong enough why, we can endure any how.
Yeah.
And it really sounds like that purpose piece, that identity piece, once you get clear on that, the how is just automatic, right? You just know what to do. So, I mean, can you continue speaking to that? Because I love it. And it's been so impactful for so many people, this change that you committed to.
Yeah.
But also, I just think about your kids. What they've seen dad do, you know, is just remarkable. Yeah, yeah. That's your legacy right there, you know?
Yeah. It's pretty, and I was actually a terrible student in English class growing up. So there's just that aspect of it too. It's like, wow. But that's kind of, you know, the story we keep telling ourselves about what's impossible. It's been a really interesting ride for me. You know, in the like personal development, self-help, whatever you want to call it space, there's a lot of noise, and a lot of people who are the most effective, and I'm not throwing shade at all, but I don't jibe with the approach. Like, the, you know, you see, like, I can teach you how to make $1 million selling courses to people on how to make $1 million. I'm like, well, you just, like, you're telling me that you're scamming me right now, but somehow people are falling for it. I know that stuff works, and, you know, it's in different masterminds. They're like, oh, you got to angle it this way. And it just never felt right to me. And it's the why. Like, that's lots of hows. That's someone else's how. And more power to them, and they're successful, and, you know, they did better than me. That's awesome. But it's a very hard space to compete in, because there's a lot. And even on my best day, am I going to come close to selling as many books as anyone, you know, any of those big names would? I got really comfortable with not caring about that.
Nice.
Because I just, you know, and it goes back to like, you're actually the one who told me the average number of books that get sold in a year, you know, and yeah, it was like 248 or something. And that was one of the most freeing moments I've ever had. It's like, oh, the bar's like, I think my mom's probably going to buy that many. So it's my mother's. She bought 30. No joke. Yeah. So like
my mom bought a bunch too. She just kept giving them away to everybody, you know. It was awesome.
I'm like 218. I just that's all I have to sell now. But it just like it let me let go of caring about it. And that actually is a big part of this, Di. Is like I've done 3 TEDx talks, and one of them, the last one I did, actually, I think as important and pivotal as Do a Day is for me, this one is the one that I think I end up touching on the most is so often there's something that we really want. We care about it. We want to go for it. We want to achieve it. It aligns with who we are, and we're too scared. And a lot of that fear is ultimately around rejection, which is a natural and normal thing. You don't want to fail. You don't want to be told no. You don't want to put yourself out there to have it blow up in your face. I kind of reframed it. And I think the book example is a great one. Is right now, you know, rewind before I released it, I have sold 0 books. If I put this book out and I'm the only one who buys it, I will have put a book out and sold 1 copy, which is better than I've done now. Worst case scenario, I don't even buy my own book, or my wife doesn't, or whoever. And I've sold the exact same amount of books as I've sold now. So like, what have I actually lost? I've grown tremendously by writing it. But what did I actually lose? If you want to ask someone out and you're like, oh, but they might say no. You're not going out with them now. So if you ask them out and they say no, you're just still not going out with them. Mm-hmm. It's up to you whether you want to care about, you know, and do it in the right way and be respectful and, you know, don't be a horrible person in the process. But if you're respectful and ask them kindly and genuinely, and they're like, no, you know, I'm not interested, or I'm already with someone or whatever, how much worse off are you? That's actually your choice. Whether you're going to allow that to redefine who you are is your choice. And I see that in myself and others on a daily basis, is like, we put ourselves out there. Someone's not going to like it. How do you react to that? That's up to you. I got 1 negative comment on Do a Day on Amazon, and friends who start were like, that guy was such a jerk. He ripped it apart. Like, what a waste of time. The author doesn't know anything. He's really self-centered and self-serving. He's obnoxious. Like all these really, really mean things. And a friend was like, that, like, you should reach out to Amazon and have them remove it. And I was like, no, like, if you look at this guy's profile, he has reviewed like 30 or 40 self-help, personal development, you know, emotional intelligence kind of books, and he pans all of them. I'm like, this is someone who's very hurting. And he's trying to, he may not even be aware of it, but he's trying to find help and he just keeps not getting it. And he's blaming the authors for it. And that's like, I saw that as like, this is someone who's hurt, not like, yes, poor me. I don't care. Like, it's not that I don't care. I care and I was hurting for him, but I wasn't offended. I didn't take that as like, oh my God, I'm the worst person in the world. I'm this obnoxious, you know, narcissist that he's describing. I viewed it as like, wow, this poor guy. Someone shoplifted one of my books from a store at a local store selling them. And and I was kind of like, that's kind of meta. Like you shoplift a self-help book. I'm like, I would have just given it to them and not had the store lose the money. Cause clearly they needed it. I'm like, if you're shoplifting a book like that, like you need it. But you know, we don't need to take these things personally and then define ourselves on it. And that's really hard. But that's been, and none of that would have come if I didn't start with, you talked about it, and this is what sparked the book, is the first domino. Like you talked to me about, line up that, like, what's the last domino you're trying to knock down? Now start setting them in reverse. And if the book's the first domino, and that's what I got to after you and I had a call, I had to go out for a run at like 4 a.m. and think through everything. That, you know, all these other dominoes, I only saw the last domino. I didn't realize there's a whole like design to knock down after that. And that's been really cool for me discovering it. But this like freedom from the fear of rejection and that sense of failure because someone else just didn't give you what you wanted that you didn't have to begin with, that's been really opening for me.
Yeah. And more than that, I think, just to add to this, because I love everything that you're sharing. And of course, everybody that's listening or watching, that in the show notes, there's links to the books, the TED Talks, all Brian's great stuff, because you're going to have to go check it out. And I know the Do a Day book is still available along with all those other books. It just, it will be well worth your time to check it out.
And oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, no, easy to make that recommendation. But I think what I appreciate most, Brian, is that this journey that you've been on is continuously evolving, you know, but obviously the mindset and what you experience through that huge transition and shift, this alignment of values, purpose, mission, vision, you know, just, you can see how it just created this sort of a wormhole effect, just sucking you through, right, to the next chapter of your life or the next season. And I'd love to just hear, you know, because of that evolution, how's it set you up for what you're doing now, what you're doing today? And more importantly, do you mind sharing that? But also, what's next for Brian?
So first of all, I'm glad you phrase it like that, because I when people are like, you know, I just need to fix this or what, I hope I'm never done. And I'm not interested in comparing myself to what I was like at 35 or whatever. Like in each moment of my life, I just want to compare myself to that moment and whether I'm doing what I could have done. So what's next for me? I don't know. I have senses of things that I want to do, but I'm not really too focused on that. It's more whether I'm doing what I think is the right thing in this moment. And I've gotten very comfortable with the ambiguity of that path. Mm-hmm. Some really, you know, we talked about one of the moments I left a job and was going to go out on my own right when COVID ended up hitting. Mm-hmm. So like 2020, as for a lot of people, I made less than I did my first year out of undergrad. Only I had a family and a house and all the financial responsibility. Like I faced some pretty big, like, I don't know whether I screwed up, but I stuck with it. I think all of this comes from that. From that do a day moment where it really forced me, first of all, to rewrite or reboot my operating system, because it was always there. I just wasn't in touch with it. You know, you get infected by a virus of some bad code, and I don't know why I'm making myself into a computer in this whole talk, but
we're in the matrix, man. We're in the matrix.
I restarted my phone and it suddenly was able to get online again.
Yeah.
So that opened up very different leadership for me. Very different achievements. I went on the career side to have ups and downs, but more ups than downs. And I'm really thankful for that. Today, I run an organization. I'm in the insurance space by day, and I fight crime by night. I run like an industry trade organization. Yeah, that's right. Insurance Batman. It's not as sexy. Yeah. I put out all these other books. I wanted to, you know, this vision of myself as a public speaker, like I'm Tony Robbins, maybe not that level, but like doing that kind of stuff off a do a day, that didn't pan out. And that's okay. I do some of that, but I do way too much on the insurance side. So like I'm overbooked beyond belief. And I actually like tried to price myself out of something and hope they would say no. It's great to be in demand like that. And where I'm at right now is the opposite problem of what I had in the past, where I've got too much and I'm learning. It's, you and I've talked about this, when you're in the hustle and you eat what you kill. And especially when you've kind of lost everything financially and like, you know, trying to build a business in COVID and no income for months and months, the idea of saying no to something is really unsafe. And, I'm not in that place, thankfully, but I still have that hunger and it's a good thing, but this is just like me with my anxieties. Like, no, but it's protecting me. It is and it isn't, because it could also kill me. It's overworking me and it's keeping me from things that also matter to me. So for 2024, one of the key things for me is reinstituting that decision-making balance. And I've got a bit of a rubric where I'm weighing things out. And I also just need to be comfortable saying, oh, you know what? I'm not able to do that. And that's okay.
Powerful phrase.
So that's
powerful phrase.
Hopefully that's what's next for me, is getting some sleep.
You know,
not right now, but I'm about balance, and I've got this plan of retirement, which is not actually retirement, but is freedom to divvy up my time as I wish. I'd still like to do an Ironman. That's the last thing I talked about in Do a Day.
And
I still have not done that, but All right. I would love the free. I love, like, when I was marathon training, that's all I did. And it was the most beautiful time in my life. I'd love to get back to that. So that's kind of, if I had a dream scenario, it's getting to a place where I have the pure freedom to spend my time in ways that really just feel enriching. And I generally get to do that, but I also have pressure and things that, yeah, I would probably skip if I could. That's all right. I'm working on it. And you grow so much in the journey. I'm not bemoaning any of it. I'm unbelievably thankful for what I have. It's pretty amazing. And especially the number of times I was told or saw or so certain that I wouldn't have any of it. So, you know, I can't be anything but glad if I really reflect on it.
I think it's a wonderful state of mind, but also it's an earned perspective based on your life experiences and just your proactive approach to life, right? It's not like you continue to wait around for stuff to happen. You went out and made it happen. You know? And sure, when you're doing that, you're going to run up against obstacles and you can either figure out how to get around them or you choose to go down a different path. And that's all okay, right? I mean, as long as you feel like you're still progressing. And I think that was the nice thing about the Do a Day was every day you're experiencing a win.
Yeah.
You at least have a micro moment where you see that needle move the right direction.
Yeah.
And I mean, you compound that over a year, 365 days, or like this year, 366, you know, like game on, man. Like you're going to be that much further along than when you started the year. And thank you for not only modeling that mindset, but also mentoring people both directly and indirectly through the content, the books, you know, you're still showing up on podcasts here and there. And attending a lot of stages. And I know that impact is being felt far and wide. And thank you again for just being here today, Brian. I give my guests always the last words. So I'd like to give you the last word to share the last message for the audience, the listeners. And we'll call it a day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a throwback to you. You were one of my first, like, I'm reaching out and I don't know if he's going to respond, but you did. And I think that's what we need to remember is, I think the biggest way I've been able to have any impact for myself and for others is by showing up when people call for it. And I take so much from that selfishly, like it's not purely for the good of others. I feel amazing contributing to someone else doing better. And I'm very lucky for the fact and thankful for the fact that you seem to be operating the same way when I needed it. Who's this guy that reaching out of the blue, but you were there for me. And that was a really powerful and unlocking moment for me, but also great role modeling that honestly, Di, like, I don't know if you even remembered that, but it stood out and left a message to me that I've tried to replicate throughout my life. And you've done that for me so many times. Like I said, wouldn't be a book, first guest. So awkwardly, I'll make my last point about you, but it's invaluable and we all get those chances. So it's just a question of whether we take them and serve for others.
Oh man. Love you, brother. Thank you. Like honestly, you. Brian, that was very kind of you to say, but, you've been a wonderful rock in my life as well at times where I've really needed it. Even just remembering past conversations, looking at your book, it's a nice little shift back to that realignment with my own why.
Yeah.
You know, and purpose. And I have to remember that there's days where, yeah, I may not be feeling that fulfilled, but I can't wait, to do that thing that I know realigns me. And I think it's just that continuation of taking the right actions for the right reasons. And if we're, in a good place and we're doing that consistently, usually the right results will ensue,
Yeah.
So it's, thanks again for being here today. And, I can't wait to have Sharon on the show later, but,
yeah, no pressure, but yes.
thanks again for being here today, Brian. And, again, everyone in the outro, I'll sort of surmise a lot of the key takeaways. Also remind you of what links to check out. And, please do reach out to Brian if you have any questions, thoughts, or you want to book him to come and speak at your next event. I tell you, he's a phenomenal speaker and, I'll have links to the TED Talks to prove it. So there you go. What a journey we've been on today with Brian. His story is a powerful reminder that no matter the obstacles we face, transformation is always within our reach through small daily actions. Brian's do-a-day philosophy is not just a strategy, but a way of life that encourages us to live fully in the present while working towards our future selves. If Brian's message resonated with you, remember to share this episode with someone in need of a little inspiration. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review for the 2% Solution podcast, as well as go to the show notes and check out some amazing links to Brian's platform, his TED Talks, his books, and honestly, a whole pile of motivating, inspiring, and educational content. Until next time, keep striving for that 2% improvement every single day. And remember, the power to change lies within you. See you in the next episode.